Now, we were just going over what is presented as, in a sense, traversing parts of what would provide a reconciliation of consciousness with self-consciousness. Here, focusing on the way in which the object is construed in such a manner that the features that characterize the object as something distinct from self-consciousness end up getting reconciled with self-consciousness. Get taken to be determined in virtue of the self. And Hecke points out in 794 that if we look back at what we've just been looking at and think about where we had most recently come from, we can say that this reconciliation has been brought about from two sides, one time in the religious spirit and the other in consciousness itself. He here tells us at the beginning of 794 that the reconciliation in religion took the form of being in itself, whereas in this other development, which we've traced through various developments of shapes of consciousness from reason into different forms of spirit. He says here that it took place in the form of being for self. Now in religious, in religious spirit, in what respect can we say there was a reconciliation in what was the being in itself, back to which religious consciousness was relating?
Presumably it's another self.
Yeah, there's another self. And another self that was of the same character as ourselves. And not only that, but it wasn't just another self, it was a self that had this universal significance, this absolute significance to which we ourselves could be connected. So here we had, in a sense, the true content being presented. True in the sense that it's a content that allowed for this reconciliation, that allowed for the possibility of self-knowledge, allowed for there to be a removal of the discrepancy between knowing and its object. Now, what we've just been considering, here Hegel speaks of it as being something that is in the form of being for self. That is, the way in which self-consciousness, or I should say consciousness, is could be said to be relating to the object. How does that cash itself out? That we're not talking about the in itself, but how it's being related to or being for self. Because in a certain sense, I mean, I was just discussing it as involving ways in which the character of the object became, in a sense, identified with the self, determined by the self. Now, why regard that as being, in a sense, reconciliation that's taking place on the side of how consciousness relates to as opposed to the content?
That it doesn't, self-consciousness doesn't take it to be anything different, anything other. Yeah. I'm not really sure what the question is, actually.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's about, you know, the appropriateness. I mean, Hegel's presenting these as two different sides of the reconciliation. They've taken place in terms of one could say that the two sides of the relationship of consciousness, one pertaining to the object as it's taken to be in itself, and the other in terms of the relation of that consciousness has to its object. And both have to go through a certain transformation in order for there to be the possibility of a removal of the difference between the terms. And this is spoken of in terms of reconciliation of consciousness and self-consciousness. So that that which confronts is no different from the self-knowledge of self-consciousness. But that requires a self-knowledge or self-consciousness take a form that allows for that to be the case, and equally that what is in itself be construed so that it can also be something that will be equivalent to the knowing that knows itself. Now, admittedly, both of them are linked, obviously, to their counterparts. That is to say, religious consciousness, it characterizes what it takes to be in itself in a certain way. It does so by having a certain kind of relation to it. Of course, those vary depending upon the form of religion. And here, too, in the three successive shapes that we're looking at, there's also, obviously, something that's taken to be in itself. But there's a way in which the relationship to what is taken in itself, to what is in itself, is here determinative of what allows it to be in conformity with itself in terms of the relating of observation, right? The relating of the enlightenment in its treating everything as useful. And then finally, the relating consciousness, of conscience, I should say, where its activity is something that is focused around its self-knowledge. Now, Hegel points out that in the way they've been examined so far, they fall apart. Right? The religious conscience characterizes what is in itself in a way in which there is a reconciliation, but in a way in which, given the form of representation, given the abiding form of objectivity, that true content is related in terms of there's still a disparity. In this other form, by contrast, the relating to the content is being performed in a way that has this reconciliation. But it's not being done in the form of what is in itself. Now, if you wanted to say, in what sense is it not being done in the form of what is in itself, what might that refer to if you think back on either observation or the enlightenment or conscience? What's that?
In each instance, it was mediated. In fact, its true meaning was this relation to the self. It's being poured itself.
Yeah, but how might one say that the dimension of what was in itself was somehow lacking in a way in which it wasn't in religion? Because that's a suggestion that here we have this kind of unification occurring on one side, still leaving this other dimension not yet taking that form. Whereas in religion, the converse is the case. You have the content, what is taken to be in itself, having a form that, in a sense, what does one take to be in itself? You know, taking points out at the very beginning of Revealed Religion. What one confronts is the unity of oneself and the divine, which is there in this divine that is like us, like me, this divine that has become, you know, a finite subject. So there the reconciliation is on display as that to which I'm relating. Here the reconciliation is somehow being done in the manner in which I'm relating to what is given. I'm relating to it as merely useful. I'm relating to it as something to be observed. I'm relating to the world in terms of being conscientious. I mean, what is it about all of those three modalities that might be said to lack this element of there being an in itself, where there's still a contrast to something in itself that doesn't quite fit the kind of reconciliation that's achieved in the way in which one is relating as a knowing, the way one is knowing oneself.
Isn't the in itself in all those cases always the in essential, the contingent and finite, and so just brush it aside? Sort of like a residual, something left over after we've considered what's important.
Yeah. But why would that be something that leaves something at hand that's not there in religious attitude? Well, let me put it this way. You know, we're dealing in these three cases with something that is present in the activity of the subject, right? As opposed to something that the subject relates to as being independent of itself. So, and yet it's still, you know, even if there's a certainty that anything independent here really has no externality, or there is in no way alien to what's going on, it's not as if everything has been drawn into this. The activities have this kind of subjective dimension to them, which is not to be had in terms of religion, where that is what one is relating to is that which exhibits this reconciliation. Here, the activity is a reconciling. Is itself the reconciling or the reconciliation?
In religion, it is.
No, I'm saying in these other three, which are presented as presenting the reconciliation in the form of being for self. I mean, Hegel suggests the following. He says that, you know, we have these things that they're two separate developments that are distinguished from one another, taking place in two different types of awareness. They have not yet been unified in a single awareness. And if there were to be such a unification, as he tells us towards the end of 794, it would be something in which consciousness as a spirit knows itself not merely as it is in itself, or in terms of its absolute content, as it does in terms of religious consciousness, and it won't do it merely as it is for itself, in terms of the contentless form that it exhibits in these other types of activities, remember, both utility, conscience, and even observation, the activity of observation, all have a kind of formality with to them. It leaves, you know, the objects that are then given a kind of subjective meaning, or a meaning for the self, you know, otherwise untouched. Well, you know, if there were a unification, then it would involve this reconciliation being something that would be apprehended to be occurring both in what is distinguished as being in itself and in what is for consciousness, the dimension of its own relating. So this is the unification that, in a sense, will eliminate the abiding discrepancies. And this is what is really, in a sense, the agenda for what would involve a move to absolute knowing. Now, Hegel speaks of something to some degree involving an aspect of this in a reference he makes in paragraph 7 in 795 to the beautiful soul. Which you remember came up at the very end of morality, at the end of conscience. And you know, here you have a beautiful soul that was judging the other conscientious agents, refraining from engaging in activity, and in this pure knowledge it regarded its pure knowing and its pure judging things as being, in a sense, what is essential. Hegel here characterizes this as, in a sense, providing not merely intuition of the divine, but the divine's self-intuition. The divine self-intuition. You know, this beautiful soul is this kind of absolute self-consciousness that sees in its self-consciousness was determinative of everything essential while refraining from any kind of activity, any externalization, any involvement. But because it holds fast from any realization, there's something one-sided about it. So this is not going to do the job. So it equally has a kind of limitation, and you know, I think the limitation here could be ascribed also, in general, to morality, to conscience. You know, there still is this distinction. Between what moral self-consciousness provides and what might be regarded to be in itself. Now Hegel again speaks of these two different aspects, and brings in talk of the concept in paragraph 797. And I think it's worth looking at this as a as bringing in this other way of characterizing the reconciliation. And he brings in not only the concept in contrast with representation, but talk of substance and subject, and how the reconciliation can be thought of in terms of a move that's going to involve the subject becoming substance and substance becoming subject. And this is also going to have something to do with a move to conceptualization as opposed to representation. Now, in a way, he begins on 797 by comparing the two opposing threads that need to be reconciled. He says, like, in religion was content, the form of representing another. Is here the self's own activity, what we've been looking at in conscience and the like. And he says the concept makes it binding, that the concept is that of the self's own activity. For this concept is the knowledge of the self's activity within itself as all essentiality and all existence. This is a knowledge of this subject as substance, and of the substance as this knowledge of its activity. What is the what is the connection here between the concept and the self's own activity? And in one respect, is the concept the knowledge of the self's activity within itself as all essentiality and existence, or how would that be the case? What would have to be true about the concept in question? Which is here being associated with knowledge of the subject as substance and knowledge of the substance as being knowledge of this activity. You note the contrast between these two sides in which a reconciliation has taken place on different sides. One in regard to a content that is represented, the other in terms of an activity that, however, remains the activity of the subject. Think of it in this way, in terms of what happens if the content is conceptualized, if the knowing in question is such that it conceptualizes its content without representation. How does this involve, or doesn't involve, knowledge of the subject that is conceptualizing as substance? And what does substance here seem to refer to? If we think back on the kind of vocabulary that's been used heretofore. I mean, Robin seems to refer to, you know, what is in itself as, you know, an independent totality, as opposed to the subject. Now, if you think about what's involved in the reconciliation in question, on the one hand, the object that self-knowledge confronts has to be something which allows it to be conscious of itself. So if it's going to enable that, it must also be something that takes a form of self-knowledge. Right? Because only if it's self-knowledge is the knowledge of self-knowledge confronting itself. And which is to say that by the same token, self-knowledge must be such that it makes itself its own object. So that you know, the object is not something external to it. Now, in 798, Hegel introduces absolute knowledge, or I should say absolute knowing. It's translated as absolute knowledge here. And he identifies it in several ways, and I think we want to think about how they fit together and how they point to the kind of dual reconciliations he's been pointing to up to this point. First of all, it's identified as the last shape of spirit. It's spirit which gives to its complete and true content the form of the self. And in doing that, it realizes its concept as much as it persists within this realization, within its concept. And furthermore, he characterizes it as spirit knowing itself in the shape of spirit. Okay, so we have several things put together at the same time, right? Spirit knowing itself in the shape of spirit. Spirit, which gives its true content the form of the self, and spirit, which realizes its concept as much as persisting within this realization, within its concept. I think we want to think about the connection between these. In other words, why would it be that spirit that knows itself in the shape of spirit and literally in its own shape, not in a shape that is in the shape of objectivity, but in the shape of spirit, why that would also involve realizing its concept and being in that way something whose realization remains within its concept. This is suggesting, of course, that the spirit knowing itself in the shape of spirit is knowing itself not in the form of representation. It's not engaging in representing. It's engaged in conceptualizing. And if spirit, as he says, is going to appear in this element, in this element of its self-knowledge, the self-knowledge in which it knows itself in the shape of itself, and then that's conceptual, then what further term gets associated with this absolute knowing? It's science. It refers to this as being science. I think we want to put these together a little bit briefly. First of all, given what was said about the distinction between representation, how representation was connected to the continuance of spirit self-knowledge still involving consciousness, still involving it's having as an object something that is not its actual self-consciousness. How would an absolute knowing is construed as spirit knowing itself in the shape of spirit involve spirit knowing itself as its concept, or another way of putting it, spirit here knowing itself by conceiving itself, spirit engaging in a conceptualizing grasp, which is identified as science. How are these things linked together? And then we can think about what science amounts to. You may remember that Hegel had spoken of, in his introductions to the logic, of how the phenomenology of spirit is going to provide, in a sense, the concept of science, at the same time that he speaks about logic itself as resulting in a concept of its own. But what science is, nonetheless, would seem perplexing, and which might seem to be resolvable if the concept of science that phenomenology introduces, or perhaps results in, is a concept of science that is very negative in character, very minimal, consisting in, let's say, the elimination of the opposition of consciousness and the arrival at the element of science, which is the lack of any difference between knowing and its object. What might also be considered the element of the concept as opposed to representation. So what would be the connection? If spirit knows itself in the shape of spirit, not in the shape of objectivity. What is the shape of spirit?
Subjectivity.
Well, more specifically, in a way.
The relationship which is self.
And what kind of relationship is it? Well, I mean, it's a specific kind. I think you have to think of it as it knows itself. I mean, here the object has to have a form of knowing itself. If self-knowledge is to be confronting itself and not something other than itself. So it has to be, there has to be, one could say, a knowing of knowing that has as its object the knowing of knowing. And this is something that can only be done in the form of conceiving itself. And you want to ask yourself, well, why would that be maintained? Well, one represents an object insofar as there's a content that has some givenness attached to it. And something about it that's given independently of the relating to it. And that signifies in a way that one has as one's object, not one's actual self-consciousness, but something given independent of that. But if here one is conceiving something that is itself a self-conception, then there is no independent given content. I mean, you may remember the very first class I pointed to one way of perhaps avoiding our path through everything was to think of how one could achieve an equalization of knowing as object. If you think about a basic problem of foundational epistemology, namely, it's making this turn to investigate knowing. In doing so, it has to take knowing as something that's given apart from its object, so that you can investigate knowing by itself, which means that the knowing that one is investigating is a knowing of an object different from itself. But that then puts the investigation of knowing in the predicament that the knowing used by the foundational epistemologist to know knowing is different from the knowing under investigation. Because the knowing of the transcendental investigator is a knowing of knowing. But the knowing it is investigating is not a knowing of knowing. It's a knowing of an object distinct from itself. And that seems to signify that the transcendental investigation is automatically using a knowing that is not being examined. It's dogmatic. And it seems that to escape that problem, one has to remove the difference between the knowing that does the transcendental investigation, the knowing that investigates knowing, and the knowing that is under investigation. So how can that be done? How can the knowing under investigation be indistinguishable from the knowing that does the investigation? Well, it can be if the knowing under investigation is the knowing of knowing. If true knowing is the knowing of knowing, then the knowing of knowing that is investigating true knowing will be investigating the knowing of knowing. If you can establish a true knowing, is that that the knowing that can achieve a certainty that is in conformity with its truth, well, if that turns out to be something that's knowing of knowing, only then can there be an investigation that is not dogmatic. But if that's the case, then knowing is not different from its object. It's just a knowing of knowing. So it sort of ends up having to eliminate the difference between knowing and its object if one is going to take an investigation of knowing seriously and do it in a way that's going to be internally consistent. Now that might be regarded as a kind of shortcut to what's going on here, although it ends up with something very similar to what is here presented as the is what absolute knowing is going to be, because it's going to be self-knowing of spirit in the shape of spirit, where the absolute knowing that will in a way remove the form of representation, will remove the abiding discrepancy between knowing and its object, will involve a self-knowing of self-knowing. And this can only be the case if the self-knowing in question is a conceptualizing self-knowing, of a conceptualizing self-knowing. Now, of course, to be conceptualizable, what must be true of the knowing? Of knowing. What character must it have? To be conceptualizable, as opposed to being something that has to be represented.
Does it have to be universal?
Yeah, it has to be universal in character. And moreover, it has to have, you could say, an individuality that is inherent in its universality. It does not involve extraneous features. It has to be a kind, as Hegel will say over and over again, a kind of pure knowing or pure self-knowing.
Yeah.
Or a not just self-consciousness, but a self-consciousness that knows itself to be spirit, which knows itself to be a universal self-consciousness. So I think these considerations give a clue of some sort as to why the solution will have to operate with these kind of terms. You have to talk about spirit, knowing itself, by having as its object, self-knowing in the shape of spirit. And this has to be, in a sense, a pure self-knowing. It has to be something that is conceptualizable, that conceives itself. And that, in a sense, is, one could say, the minimal characterization of science. Or it's being characterized as science, then you want to ask yourself, what are we to understand by that? Why use the term science here? It's going to be something that's leaving behind the form of representation and everything that that involves, leaving behind also the opposition of consciousness. And then the question is, well, what does the science itself comprise?